B-Pod Studios.
Zolak and Bertrand are live on Radio Row.
Zolak and Bertrand from the Miami Beach Convention Center, Radio Row for Super Bowl 54. This hour of coverage from Miami Beach brought to you by Eastern Standard Provisions Pretzels.
Nice.
Zo, we've had those before.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
They get the dipping sauces.
And we also now have our first guest in the Apex Entertainment guest chair. First guest of the week on
this
show.
Good start.
Former Patriots offensive coordinator Charlie Weiss is with us. Great to see you again. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, it's a new low for you guys having to start off with me, right?
No, it's great. This guy gave up his seat on a flight. What was that, a year ago? So I could sit with my kid on a Palm Beach flight.
I did do that.
Yeah,
very nice. That. I felt bad. I didn't realize Zoe had 15 kids, you know.
So you have no regrets about that act. Do you know what was going on 20 years ago today?
Well, let's see. Is that Super Bowl?
Somebody got
Super Bowl 36?
That would be 35 would have been going on that year. Oh, no, 34 would have been lead up to Super Bowl 34. This day, 20 years ago, Bill Belichick was hired as the head coach of the New England Patriots.
Wow.
What were you doing that day? Well, where were you that day? How was that going down for you?
I was hiding out in New Jersey because I was on Belichick's side in the breakup. So needless to say, you know, I was ducking. I was staying low because, you know, in that situation, I knew that I was out of the Jets too, and I knew I was going with Bill. I was going to go with Bill to New England, and you just had to let the dust settle because it was a very uncomfortable time.
Where'd you hide?
Just at my house. I mean, just wasn't really hiding it. Just that you wanted to get over with because it was a very uncomfortable transition period right there. So I was just happy to get up there, and remember getting up there and. On a Saturday and going to church and having the priest say the Lord God. And he was saying the Lord God, and I had no idea what he was saying. And I was with Chris Palmer, and I said, what is he saying?
Another church.
The Lord God?
I said, what is he saying? He's saying the Lord God. I tell you, to this day, I would have bet $1 million that he wasn't saying the Lord God. He was the Lord God, the Lord God.
Do you remember? What is he saying? Do you remember how quickly that all came together? Like, what was it? Days? Was it hours?
Oh no, this wasn't quickly coming together. You know, because you know, remember now this whole thing that you know this whole thing that went down. There was, you know, league meetings and all that other stuff right there. It was an uncomfortable period.
Now you've been to many other places since those days. Yet the one constant up there is the quarterback and the head coach. We're going to see them still together. What is your take on that?
Well, I mean, let's look at two things.
Okay,
you know, as a Patriot fan, which I am, you know, as a Patriot fan. I would like nothing more than it to end in New England as a Patriot fan.
It should.
You know, I'm saying as a Patriot fan.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not, you know, just me respecting Tommy or Bill or Mr. Kraft or all the fans. It's just that's the way you'd want it to happen. In the storybook, but, you know, Joe Montana went to Kansas City.
Yep.
You know, so don't tell me it doesn't.
I still play well, though. But he took him to the AFC title.
Well, what's to say that he wouldn't play well?
I know that. I think you put the right people around him.
I mean, so my only question would be this. If he didn't want to be free, why is he free?
True.
I mean, if he didn't want to be free, Well, I'm just, this is a rhetorical question.
I
it's not one I'm looking for an answer from.
No, you're right.
Saying,
no.
I'm saying if he didn't want to be free, then he'd be under contract. But he's free. Now, why would you be free, you know, if you didn't want to explore other places? Why wouldn't you just have a couple years left in New England and be done with it?
So this is your offense. You implemented this offense. The old Ron Earhart, you tweaked it. You're the one who went to the subset. You know, with going back to the Kribet days, all those guys with the slot receiver Troy advancing it. You look at the personnel this year, and I think he knew it going back to last May, meaning Tommy. Tommy knew last May that we really don't have the pieces to get to where we need to go. At what point this year did you look at it and say, even after they got Sanu, what more could you do with that offense? Because they couldn't go downfield. They couldn't run a screen game. Yeah, I mean, they had a back that didn't have a fullback. They had no tight end, Charlie.
Well, I watched. Can you hear this?
I can. There, okay. We got a little issue.
All right.
Okay, there we go.
I thought that, you know, people were underestimating the loss of Gronkowski to start off with, because not only did they lose Gronkowski, who was as good as anybody else, if not better than any other tight end, he also lost the other security blanket, because now with two guys to go to, meaning him and 11.
Yeah.
Now you
just double 11.
But you didn't have one security blanket. You always had two security blankets. So everyone else, they were complimentary anyway. I wasn't there for the Randy Moss days. You know, I wasn't there for those days.
But Randy set coverage. Yeah. Gronkowski sets coverage.
Yeah, but so the tight end and the slot receiver, you know, what are you going to double the tight end and double the slot on every down?
Can't.
You know. I looked at this team right now, and I knew a lot about Sanu because my kid was at Atlanta when he went over there, and I think he's a good complimentary player, you know. But he wasn't he's not a frontline guy, and I watched a lot of Harry, and I watched when I started watching a kid from NC State. In preseason tearing it up, I went back and watched more of him too, but really, and Dorsett, you know, obviously too, but
extremely complimentary.
They really, all those guys were complimentary guys and at different levels of their career and of different abilities. So they had one legit, really, James White was their other legit receiver.
Yeah, it was Edelman and him.
You know, so that was it. So I think that the loss of Gronkowski was bigger than anyone even figured it was going to be, because we're so used to the Patriots being able to hide, cover up a problem and mask a problem, right. You know, but I think that was a tough one to overcome.
Why do you think that 15 plus years ago when you were there, that it was easier to do more with less than it feels like it is now in the league, and specifically for the Patriots? Because, I mean, you guys made it work sometimes without the best personnel, and it feels like now the team struggles to do that.
Well, the game has changed some. And as Zoe will tell you, we were more at doing window dressing to do the same things.
That extensions of,
you know, we used to give personnel groups and different personnel groups and everything, but really come back to a lot of the same plays all the time. So you guys got really good at those plays. And the league has now evolved to, now especially with the Pats, where we've always been a game plan team, you know, for that game, is how many of the core plays do you see from week to week? And the answer is not very many of them. There's a handful of them you see, but you know it's a game plan oriented team. Now they've made a field day on that because teams have to get ready for that. But to do that, you got to do it with more than one legit wide receiver. And no disrespect to the other receivers.
No, it's not disrespect.
I'm not slighting them. I'm just saying that, you know, you as an offensive coordinator have to figure out, okay, what are they going to do against us? See, there were a lot of years when we were there, they didn't care who the receivers were.
So you need more talented players to pull off more complicated game plans.
Well, I mean,
Antonio Brown.
Or a guy with a little bit of experience who can more easily absorb what it is he's got going on.
They knew at the end of preseason, this is even past Josh Gordon. I don't think Gordon had anything to do with them, but going out and getting, they knew they had to go out and make a move for a guy like Brown.
Yeah, I think that, you know, obviously the kid's got problems, but he's also rare.
Kick and play.
You know, rare as a player.
Yeah.
So it's a very minimal risk. You know, it's a reputation risk, but it's not really a risk. You know, financially, you know, it's not going to end up being a big risk. You know, and it's not going to, and capital, you know, allocations is not going to be a big risk.
I just remember, you know, David Givens came in.
Yeah.
And he contributed right away.
He did.
And so maybe, you know, versus N'Keal Harry, who obviously had injury but struggled to pick it up. And so you're saying maybe it was easier at that point in time for a guy like Givens as opposed to how it is now?
No, maybe Harry, we were hoping that Harry could pick up more of the slack.
Right.
You know, when Givens wasn't counted to come be, hey, you have to be the guy, you know. Let's face it, the offense has always worked off of the tight end and slot receiver. And the better the tight end and slot receiver, the better the offense. And it's always worked that way, you know. And think about the production you've gotten out of the slot receiver over the years.
And
tell me who didn't perform. You know, I mean, Troy, Dion, Edelman.
But you're talking about all these guys.
Amendola.
You're talking about everybody. All of them. They could all win within five yards.
That's right.
See, Harry, he's big and he's lumbering. I mean, he's going to make plays because of his size and his skill. But yet there's something that's not there coming out of the route.
Yeah, you know who they told me that about when I went to the Jets? They told me the same thing about Keyshawn Johnson. And how he turned out.
Pretty good.
You know, so what we did, what we did is we learned what he could and couldn't do. So now his releases were not finesse releases. They were block releases. Yeah. Use your physicality to get open, you know, rather than try to juke him by, you know, using your finesse. They said the same thing with Keyshawn. Too slow, 4.65, can't get off the line of scrimmage.
He's a 4.65 guy, huh?
Can't get off the jam, you know, and all he did was, you know, I mean, went to the Pro Bowl. You know, he played pretty well for us.
Charlie Weiss is with us here on Radio Row and Zolak and Bertrand. Who do you like in this game? What do you think of these two quarterbacks competing in this game?
I'm openly biased towards Andy Reid. You know, he's one of my boys. I'm rooting for him. So, therefore, I'm rooting for Kansas City. I really don't care who wins. You know, there's only two teams I really pull for. Okay, I pull for the Giants because I grew up a Giant fan, and I pull for the Patriots because, you know, that really my heart and soul as a pro coach basically lied in New England. So that's the two teams I root for. But other than that, I'm just rooting for guys.
Yeah,
I root for players that I know. Yeah. I mean, like when Minnesota plays, I got both Kyle Rudolph and Harrison Smith. I mean, I recruited them since they were kids. You know, they committed to me. They played for me, you know. And then, you know, I wasn't there when they finished, but every charity event that I have, they're always there. You know, you go to their weddings and stuff. I mean, so I root for the Minnesota Vikings, but if the Vikings lose, I could care less.
Right.
I mean, you know, 5 minutes after the game's over, oh, well, the Vikings lost. You know, I don't feel like that about the Pats, and I don't feel like that about the Giants. But
you like Joe Judge getting hired by the Giants?
It's an interesting hire. You know, it's an interesting hire. You know, like, you know, when a guy who's basically an unknown guy, not unknown to you guys, but when an unknown guy comes in, you know, and every time he opens his mouth, you think you're listening to Bill talk. You know, you hope
when you let
that
when
a good
you,
or a bad
you finally
thing?
Hear him talk.
Well, but is that a good or a bad thing?
Well, it's a good thing because what he's preaching is what people want to hear. You know, it really is. I mean, there's a party line on how to do things, and you know, Bill's got that right.
Are you shocked Garrett took a coordinator's gig instead of taking time away? You're getting right back
I was surprised that was the hire there. Let's just say that.
Okay.
In more way than one. I was surprised that was the hire.
You think he reaches players?
Pardon me?
You think he reaches players?
Well, I'm saying I'm surprised it was the hire. That's all I'm saying. You know, like, hey, he might do great there. I know the people in the Giant organization really like him from when he was a backup. From when he was a backup quarterback. They really like him. But, you know, I don't. When's the last time he's called a play?
Thank you.
You know, I mean, and clap, 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 usually I would think, you know, hey, the head coach doesn't have to do it. But, I mean, the coordinators, but, you know, I don't understand when guys are put in a position to do it that haven't either been, A, groomed for doing it or haven't done it in a long time.
You had told us a year ago when we were in Atlanta, I don't remember where we were, you had said you'd be open to the right opportunity in coaching if it came along. Is that still what you're thinking?
Yeah, no, I'm done because a couple of them came along and they weren't the right opportunity. You know, in right opportunity, really, you want my number one thing? It's trust. So I would not want to go to a place where either I didn't trust them or they didn't trust me. So think about it. If some guy gets a job, let's say Judge gets a job, and he offers me a job with the Giants, I don't know Judge. You know, and I don't know who for the Patriots he's talked to. Some people will talk to say, I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. Other people say he's the biggest a-hole of all time. So, you know, it all depends on who he's talking to. But with a younger coach, to go work for a younger coach, which I think would be perfect for me, to go work with a younger coach, they need to know you don't want their job.
Yeah.
You don't want their job. You've had that. You've been at the top. That's not what you want. Because a coordinator job in the NFL is 10 times better than the head coach's job. You don't get paid as much, but the job is better. Because all you got to do is worry about football. All the crap. Hey, the head coach's office, there's the door right over there. You got a problem? Go
That's
see
right.
him, my man.
My final one for you. How many more years do you think Bill Belichick has in him as a head coach?
Every day he comes into work, and he's got two kids named Belichick on the staff. And here it is. Walks in the door, give me a little fist bump. There it is. I can't put a value on that. Okay.
You think that's revived? You think that's re-energized him?
Yes, yeah. I do. Every day I was with my kid. Now, remember, I left Kansas City and went to Florida. My kid went with me. He was a freshman.
That's good perspective. He was
the head coach's intern. Every day, well, I didn't talk to him all day long, all the time, but I'd see him every day, multiple times a day, and he was working with us. Then I left to go to Kansas. He left to go to Kansas. He's in the office 30 hours a week, maybe more. Little fist bump, eat dinner together, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, the day I'm sitting home, I had gotten fired from Kansas, and we're sitting home because Charlie told Kansas, you know, he told him what New Jersey bred people would tell Kansas. But anyway, he's sitting at home taking classes online, and he's wrapping it up, and he gets a phone call from Saban. And he said, what are you doing? And so I remember because I was coming back from Tampa, and I get home, and he goes, I got a call from Saban. And I said, what do you want? He goes, he wants me to fly down there and interview. So he was flying on a Friday morning. I said, really? I mean, this is like I never worked with Saban.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I'm buddies with Saban or anything. We know each other, and we say hello and everything. So he goes down there, and, you know, he interviews with him on a Friday. And so now we're at church on Sunday and get out of church, and there's a phone call from a message for him from Saban. So I go on the subway to get him a sub.
Off subway.
After church, I go on the subway to get him a sub. I come out, and he goes, I got to be there Tuesday. So now you're going cold turkey. You've been with your kid for 21
what
years.
What do you do now?
you can't get psychologically ready for your kid to be gone in 2 days.
Yeah.
It was worse on me.
It's crazy how quick things move, though.
I mean,
in this game.
Literally, literally gets a call Sunday, packs up his stuff Monday. I drove him down to Tuscaloosa on Tuesday, dropped off his car, got on a plane on Wednesday, flew back. That was it. You know, that next time I saw him was the spring game. I mean, so I think that every day Bill walks into work and it's another day he gets to help develop his kids, you know, develop his kids as well as coaching. I think that, you know, I don't see an end in sight for
you. Had to go cold turkey while you were getting him a cold turkey. Subway.
Oh,
this guy.
Good night.
No, it was roast beef, by the way. Sorry to disappoint you.
That's all right.
I usually get the cold cut trio. My kid loves it.
That's okay. Charlie Weiss,
great to see you.
We really appreciate you stopping by. Always good to talk to you.
All right, thanks, man.
See you, Chuck.
Charlie Weiss with us here on Zolak and Bertrand. Go nowhere. There's plenty more to come from Miami Beach on Radio Row for Super Bowl 54.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Hopefully this press conference will go a little better than the last one I had. First of all, I want to thank everyone for coming out tonight. I know it's late and short notice. I know the last 3 weeks have probably been trying for all of you, but that's all behind me. I'm tremendously excited to be here, to be a part of the New England Patriots organization. This is a first-class operation. I've had an outstanding experience in 1996 when I was here with the Patriots and with Robert. And I'm thrilled to be part of this organization and to be able to have the opportunity to lead this team.
It was 20 years ago that Bill Belichick went to the podium and apologized to the media, saying it must have been a trying time for you all. Oh, how things have changed. We had Charlie Weiss. Our thanks again to Charlie Weiss for being with us last segment. He was obviously part of that transition from New York to the New England Patriots. 20 years. Did it feel like 20 years ago?
I think it
started to feel like 20 years.
Not enough. 20's long, man. It's like half. It's half your life. Almost.
How old are you?
50.
50?
50-ish.
50-something.
50 plus.
I'm going to knock you out this week.
Okay.
50 plus. I'll put you on the beach.
Yeah, you know what? You look at that.
Cover me with a tarp.
Who's that on the beach? That's just Hardy.
Pull your pants down.
Is there a Roman candle in between?
Who didn't light the Roman candle? Why didn't you light it?
Right in between the butt cleavage.
Jesus.
20 years ago, he was hired as New England Patriots. Yeah, I think it's starting to feel like 20 years.
But it's an interesting perspective that Charlie talked about, you know, with the kids, because everybody looks at Shula's number. I think we all do. And I think from a milestone perspective and from a historical perspective, Bill wants the all-time record. Not only does he want that, but your kids, working with your kids, revive you a little bit. Sort of like, yeah, we talked at the start of the show with Kobe Bryant. His daughter brought basketball back to him because, Dad, I want to watch games. He was so burned out about playing 20 years of basketball since he was 17. I don't even want to watch a game again. And she's like, Dad, can we start going to games? And that it sort of brings you back to the game. And how much does this reinvigorate Bill, you know, with the kids, with Nantucket, with the ability of Mr. Kraft to give him everything he wants, unlimited facilities, anything you need, you know, payroll, hire you, call the shots. Yeah. Makes 20 years go a little quicker, I think, than what Bill may have expected his tenure could have been here. At the beginning, going back to 20 years ago, I don't think Bill would say and look at it, yeah, I'm going to be here 20 years based on how many different teams Bill has been bounced to or where he went, whether it was Cleveland, whether it was the Giants, starting with the Colts, going back to Detroit. People forget he was in Detroit.
I would just say this. Does any coach who gets a job in this league right now Does anybody get a job? Never mind expecting, that would be foolish, but even thinking that 20 years in the job that they're getting hired for is even a possibility.
No, people, no. People look at Mike Tomlin and say 9 years is too long. There's,
the high end, sort of the high end is 10. And yeah. I think about it with...
And 10's a great run.
With Gruden getting the job with the Raiders, it's like 10 years, that guy's not going to be there in 10 years. They're going to be on the... You just expect head coaches to have a run that goes... 7, 8, 9 years and figure, okay, something's got to give at that point. So 10 is a lot. The 20? It's unheard of.
I would say that his 20-year run is very impressive just on its own, but is even more impressive based on when it's happened. 20 years right now in pro sports.
20 years in football with how much the game has changed over those 20 years.
The game has changed. The success is still there. I'm talking more about speaking to players and having the attention of players. And I think in recent years, there may have been some pushback in that regard. Rob Gronkowski talking about how it's not fun, right? Needs to be more fun for him. I think there have been maybe some guys that have not loved, you know, the way it sometimes goes. But the results obviously speak for themselves. But the 20-year run to me is even more impressive because of the modern athlete.
Yeah.
Who is, they're all stars. They all have their wants and needs and desires. And for the most part, they are catered to.
It's truly.
And that wasn't true 30 years ago. As much as it is now. I mean, it existed, of course, but not the way it does now.
It's amazing Brady's been there that long, too. Like, the combination of those two is what's... Yeah, we can sit here and talk about Bill. We can sit here and talk about Brady and which one makes which guy go. And, man, do they still need each other? Do they want to win without each other? There's so many angles to this, and that's why it's going to be such a fascinating offseason as, you know, we head into free agency. We didn't even talk about Drew Brees and the stuff from, you know, yesterday and... Him even playing in the Pro Bowl. We'll get to that. Like, that shocked me. Like, is he pondering retirement? And can that open up another spot for Brady potentially to go to? I mean, this thing could be a whirlwind this next month.
With 20 years for Bill, I also question the does it end well. But it doesn't end well for a lot of coaches, regardless of how it ends, whether it is retirement or it is leaving the team and looking at other opportunities. How many guys leave their job as a head coach in sports?
And it's great.
And it ended great.
Name the last one.
And it ended well.
Name the last one in football.
You know, and we've talked about things not ending well with Tom Brady Sr. saying that, oh, I know how Tom is, and I know no matter what, it's not going to end well. Never does. Yeah, that's sort of true of head coaches in professional sports. It typically doesn't end well.
So head coaches in all of sports where it ends well with a team.
Parcells it didn't, Neil.
How did it end with Doc Rivers with the Celtics?
Poorly.
And he... was a good coach and has had some success where he's gone. It's not like he was a bad coach and it was, you know, things had just gone completely south.
No, he didn't have an appetite to deal with going back through and cycling through to try and get good again.
Right.
He didn't have any desire to go through it and have patience for it. He thought, nope, I'm now a coach of good teams, not bad ones. Not, and in that league, that's a huge difference, coaching talent or not coaching talent. And he did not want to have another team that didn't have the talent. So he was, I'm out of here.
You know, when you ask Charlie, like, how much longer do you think Bill's going to coach?
And by the way, I give the Celtics a lot of credit for how they handled his departure. Because the Celtics had every right to be pissed. And if they were, they never expressed it publicly. They never leaked it out privately. They never were behind the scenes trashing him on the way out of town the way, you know, we know other teams in town would do that with their manager.
What about Bill Cowher?
Zoe would probably speak better on that than I could.
Didn't end badly.
Didn't end badly, but it didn't end the way he wanted it to, and I think it was short. There's a lot of people that have problems with Cowher getting in the Hall of Fame because they don't think it's enough tenure.
Didn't end the way he wanted it to.
He won with the bus. You know, Ben's rookie year. Right? No, that was Tomlin.
So when Cowher left, I don't remember all of the circumstances. I know that his wife had passed away.
Okay. I'm trying to figure it. Was he the head coach with Big Ben? No. That was Tomlin.
He had been there 15 years when he quit. 15 years. Yeah.
But it wasn't after a 2-14 season. It wasn't the fan base running him out of town. It didn't end.
He burned out.
It didn't end badly.
You're 8-8 in his final year.
As virtually every other example, you know, I think your point remains, though, Beadle. You got to look long and hard before you find examples of head coaches in sports who leave on really good terms. And when you ask Charlie, like, how much longer Bill has, well, he mentioned his kids and how you can't put a price on that. But it's tough to envision a scenario where Belichick wouldn't be the coacher anymore, because you have to think, well, either ownership doesn't want him or he's no longer successful. And I can't make my mind go to either one of those two places, where ownership doesn't want him or he's not successful as a head coach. And something needs to happen, or he just wants to quit.
Right.
He just wants to walk away. Yeah. That's how it's going to have to be. He has to be done. That's the only way my mind can grasp it. Of course, yeah, Belichick might end up going 2-14 and decide it's time to make a change. But I grant you that could happen, but I believe it's going to have to be because he doesn't want to coach anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the Carr one's a good example because it's along those lines. He didn't want to coach anymore. Family. He cited family. He did engage in contract talks. They wanted to keep him. He didn't want to stay. He didn't want to do it anymore. And so, not perfect. I don't know. But that's the way he felt at the time.
Coach is a different animal, man. I mean, even look at Schiano and the way stuff ended here. Yeah, you get a title. You end up going away, saying it's family. Next thing you know, you're coaching Rutgers. You're the head coach. Like, you're in, you're out. You're in, you're out. It's like there's so many waves you go on.
This hour of Radio Row coverage on Zolak and Bertrand is brought to you by Eastern Standard Provisions Pretzels. Mm. We've got plenty more to come, including a bonus Sounds of Sunday next. Not of football sound, but of basketball sound from a couple of the former interns.
God.
You'll enjoy that.
Nice.
Next.
Idiots.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Zolak and Bertrand are live on Radio Row on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub presents Zolak and Bertrand's Sounds of Sunday.
Sounds of Sunday time.
We are using this song cause Eddie Money died.
Sounds of Sunday time.
Sunday here on Zolak and Bertrand live from the Miami Beach Convention Center. Just learned something interesting about this convention center.
Yeah, I did too.
First of all, it looks brand new. It's not. It's actually been refurbished.
It's very old,
rebuilt
actually.
A number of times. It's actually a very old building.
Right.
And it looks brand new. You'd never know it was an old building. Everything is brand new here. But this was the location. This building hosted Cassius Clay and Sonny Liston.
Wow.
The first of their two fights. Now, the second one, as we know, being in New England, they held it up in Lewiston, Maine, right? That was the big thing. They had to move it somewhere, and it ended up in Maine. And that was when he had become Muhammad Ali. Hmm. First one was right here.
Nice.
You would never know it. I was very upset with the place.
I'd like to warn the afternoon program, the 2 o'clock show.
No, they'll be fine.
If they haven't eaten yet, I would eat. And plan to eat.
They said snacks are coming at 3.
Well,
I don't see what the problem is.
The problem is the snack bar to feed an entire media congregation is about the total of four feet long.
Yeah. It's not big.
With one burner and there's like a coffee pot.
Yeah.
And maybe some pastries.
You know why they cut back this year? They had a huge problem with theft last year. People just filling up their bags and bringing it back to the hotels.
So I mean,
they
we had meatballs, we had wings, we had mac and cheese.
They decided to cut back
we
a
had
little bit
unlimited
this year.
Lay's potato chips.
Yeah, the chips were the problem.
What were the energy bars? With the Kind bars? We had all those.
Yeah.
Just take, like Big Daddy would say, if it's free, you take 3.
Yeah. Big Daddy going to join us this week, by the way.
Yes, he will.
I was emailing with him yesterday.
Did you?
I did.
He's got his little party going on down here. Saks Fifth Avenue. We got to head over there.
Big Daddy will be with us at some point. We'll nail down a time.
Big Daddy.
Let's get in the pocket. What do you say?
Here we go.
Let's go.
Feels good. Special Sounds of Sunday. That's what this is.
I like that.
You remember our intern, Cam?
How can you forget him?
Yeah. Well,
there's some interns you can forget.
Colin and Cam.
He and another former intern, Colin, the play-by-play and color analyst for UMass Hoops.
Right, player make a play.
Right. So we've listened to these guys do a little football.
Man make a man miss.
Time to listen to a little basketball. So we
and
have
they're together. There are two former UMass interns
right. talking hoops
together
now.
On the same
talking
broadcast.
Yeah. Cam and Colin, both former Zolak and Bertrand interns, with their introduction to the game.
This is UMass Men's Basketball on WMUA Sports.
I mean, I can feel the energy right there.
A lot of bass.
Welcome back.
Heavy on the bass.
Bass slamming. Downtown what? Amherst, Massachusetts. We're inside the Mullen Center for
what?
Matinee basketball between UMass and Duquesne.
Wait, did you just right say now, downtown?
Downtown?
Downtown.
Downtown? Boy, they've really
they're not downtown.
They've really perfected
I can
their,
tell you, the Mullen Center is not downtown Amherst.
Okay.
That board up, boy, he has perfected the levels, man.
Damn. Okay, there's an issue with the levels.
You think?
You know what Cam is? Cam is the Zoe of that broadcast. Can't help but mention the music.
Yeah. He's got an issue with the W, too. You have to, it's one of the first things they teach you. It's not W, it's W.
W.
Get the L in there, W. So whoever their voiceover guy is, gave it a, was it WMUA?
WMUA.
Yeah, it's W.
This is UMass Men's Basketball on WMUA Sports.
What's W?
W.
What's W?
Yeah, it's not W.
That's right.
It's not W.
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 That's right. Take U and I dub your sound.
Right.
I W.
All right. Apparently, Colin sounds a little bit like Ron Wolfley on this next.
Really?
On this next one.
What?
Step inside the three-point line, no good. Sincere carry the other way, and Sean Easton able to tap it from behind. Keon Clergeau on the break. He's going to go right into the heart of the defense, and as it's swatted away by Marcus Weathers.
Wow.
Wow.
He really reached back and fired that ball into the crowd.
Wow. Set into the heart of the defense, and he just stabbed it.
I can't hear these guys. Like, who the hell's running the board for him? I know it's college radio.
All right.
The board has anything to do with anything.
Jazz it up.
I don't know what they're going to say about the officials here, but there was a traveling call.
Uh-oh.
Marcus Weathers misses both of his free throws to keep it a two-point lead for UMass. Now they're on offense. Trent Mitchell going to try another three. No good. Bailey Steele, good contest on that. And Keon Clergeau fighting for the second.
I just don't agree.
I don't agree
with the travel. Sorry to cut you off before you call the travel.
Well, I mean,
I don't agree.
Peyton,
I reject that call.
Prior to the train
wreck. Prior to the train wreck.
The travel.
Yeah, well, I didn't hear him say travel. I just, I don't agree.
What? What the hell's happening?
Who does that on a play-by-play?
Keep your crap together, Colin.
But everything, you know, the first 5 seconds of that was pretty damn good. Miss front end, miss
post. No, the play-by-play was fine.
Cam is sounding real good. Colin's got issues.
Stepping all over him.
All right, now, sometimes throughout the course of a game, you'll have to do some calculations.
Yeah.
This is a segment.
Oh, is this 10 point runs, Colin and Cam math?
This is a segment called UMass Math.
Oh, Jesus.
Trey Mitchell, well past 10 points. He's got 17 points in this first half. So
he gets better every game.
On pace for a 30-point game, if you're looking at it that way. He's leading 34. Scores for UMass by large margin. The closest player behind him with 2 points. A group of
17
guys
of 25 points. That's not a math major, but that's 70% plus.
I'm not even going to try to give you the percentage on that, but yeah. It definitely sounds about right to me. Here's Sean East stopping and popping on a dime. No good.
Just like that shot. Could have went.
It's like Dumb and Dumber calling a game.
Oh, dear.
Oh,
Lloyd
man.
And Harry
so,
on the call.
Wait, but he's. I don't totally disagree with the 17-point, 30-point game because that means more than. To me, that means more than 30. He's going to have 30-plus. So I'll grant him that.
Uh-huh. And to his credit, 17 of 25 is 68%. He said 70, so he's very close.
Right.
All right. But you see, I would say he's on pace for 34. Why do you say 30?
I think he's meaning that he's on pace
like
to have a benchmark
30-point game.
A benchmark of 30. That's what that's how I heard it
okay.
when you first played it. I know that if you had not mentioned the math thing, before, I would have just thought, yeah, 30-point game, 30-plus points is a benchmark.
All right. Now we get into story time on the broadcast.
Mm. Oh, boy.
Real quick, Cam, definitely worth mentioning Jack Lehman Day here from the Mullen Center.
Yeah, that's huge. And up on the board right now, we got a Jack Lehman fact. Jack, the all-time winningest coach in UMass basketball history with an overall record of 231 and 138. Yeah. The court named after Jack Lehman had a major impact on this basketball team in UMass in general. Ended up finishing his career with some broadcasting of his own, actually. Jack Lehman, a big time.
Coined as the UMass version of Tommy Heinsohn. That's what I've been told.
There you go. That's a great way to put it.
Broadcasting his own, just like we're doing here today. Yeah. Much like us, Jack Lehman. Broadcasting.
Jack Lehman is like the Tommy Heinsohn.
I like how the court.
He was amazing. You want to hear a guy who was flipping out on the refs? No call against UMass was ever the right one.
He doesn't have a problem with it.
Did he say, I disagree? Did he interject a call to say,
no, I disagree.
I don't agree with it.
I don't agree with that call.
I get to use that next year.
Okay, so that's only part one of the Jack Lehman story time.
Oh, right. How many times did they say Jack Lehman?
Oh.
Yeah, like I said, Jack Lehman Court, the new parquet they have down there, named after him. Beautiful outline of Massachusetts on it.
We both read that wonderful biography, or I don't know what the term you'd use for it, but the book about UMass history of
Marty
UMass.
DeBrose.
Yes.
I forget the name of it. I have it in my bag. Right?
Going big time.
Going big time, right. Marty DeBrose, yeah, great book.
What a read. Thank you, our alumni, Mark Bertrand, for getting us both book. Putting much needed reading to get done. I definitely should have done that long before my senior year of college at UMass.
I thought he said he read it.
Is this Adderall? Is this what the college kids do now? Is that what we're listening
to? How come they can't put a sentence together?
Is that what Adderall sounds
like?
Can't
formulate,
what the hell's going on?
They can't formulate a thought. So, what a great book it was. Even that we just said
we both... I got the book in my bag. You know what? Beetle guys said
but,
I should have read it before.
No, no.
We
they
got
said
it
we both read it.
We did both read it, but we didn't even have a chance to read the whole thing. It's about Jack Lehman.
But
it's about the outline of Massachusetts.
What's the name of the book?
I disagree. but the book of the Jack Lehman book.
Thanks, Mark Bertrand.
I should have read it. I did read it, but I
should have read it before I graduated.
I should have read it before, but I got to read it
before I graduated.
I should have read it twice. I should have read it two times.
Don't put the baby in the bathtub.
The hell's the matter with these two?
They
were both so calm.
Book about UMass history of
Marty DeBrose.
Yes.
I forget the name of it. I have it in my bag. Right?
Going big time.
So going big time, right. Marty DeBrose, yeah, great book.
What a read. Thank you, our alumni, Mark Bertrand, for getting us both book.
Oh, God.
And then?
They were both so calm when they interned for us.
They're very quiet.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know.
Well, it's the panic of making stuff up. It sort of takes over.
What did they make up?
They're going down a road, but they said they read it. It was so good.
Maybe they didn't read it.
And then at the end, Colin said, I wish I would have read it.
I want to talk about a book. I don't know.
It was so good.
I got the book in my bag. You want to look at the book? I'll tell you the name of the book. It's in the book is in the bag. You want to look at the book? We're going to read a book.
I was naming it again, a Lethal Weapon. Okay. Leo Getz. Yeah. It's like Leo Getz calling again. We got a break.
That we do.
Yeah.
I want more of that, though.
Is there more?
No. I need them to do more games before the season's done.
Drugs.
Coming up, Phil Perry, who's been floating around the room here this morning. Where is he? You see him?
He's somewhere.
Yeah, he's right there.
No, he's. I can't see him from where I'm sitting.
He's dressed like. He's dressed like my kid.
Phil Perry with him.
He does. He looks like Brody.
Phil Perry in 90 seconds.
Hey, Brody.
After the top of the hour, a couple of minutes. Okay.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.